From the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, a lot of talk about the budget negotiations and what they mean, plus what's happening in the Senate, and a closer look at Biden's love affair with January 6th. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and Reagan Republican. You've probably seen or heard a lot about conservatives' demands on fixing the border, but that's not part of the government funding discussion. The border is tied to the funding for Ukraine. Kansas Senator Roger Marshall joined Tony Perkins on Thursday to give us an update on that effort, along with a few other things. Here's Tony Perkins.
Senator Marshall, welcome back to the program and Happy New Year.
Tony, Happy New Year to you and your listeners. Wow, I mean, what a great number of things we've got to talk about tonight. We better hop to it.
So let's jump right into it. Can you tell us about the ongoing negotiations with the supplemental spending for Ukraine connected to the border security issue?
Yeah. So I think number one, James Lankford, a godly man, is doing a great job, working his tail off to do everything he can to try to help us secure the border. Just for your sake of your listeners, when Republicans talk about this, we talk about this as a national security issue. When my friends across the aisle talk about this, they talk about it as an immigration issue. But I can assure you, 10,000 people crossing our border every day is the number one most immediate threat to our national security. What's holding up the talks right now is the issue of parole. Joe Biden has paroled over 1.5 million illegal migrants that have crossed our border. 1.5 million.
Explain that, what that means to our viewers and listeners.
Right. So when people cross the border, they can ask for asylum. There's a whole host of things that they could do. But Joe Biden is saying, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Here's a work visa. Here's a phone. You don't have to even show up for a court date or do anything at all. You are paroled indefinitely for all practical purposes. 1.5 million people. What the law clearly states is he's supposed to do that on a case-by-case basis, and he's doing that thousands of people at a time. And that's why we should impeach Secretary Mayorkas now, and in 300 days, we should fire Joe Biden. And even today, the Democrats and President Biden refuse to quantify how much parole we should be using in the future. You know, we think it should be down in the tens of thousands per year, you know, not this 1.5 million people over his last 3 years.
Are you confident that we're going to get to a place where a measure is going to pass out of the Senate and go over to the House?
You know, I'm not. You know, but what I'll predict will happen is that the Democrats are going to walk away. They're going to try to make it look like we walked away from the deal, but they're going to walk away from this deal over the parole issue. That's the last hurdle that we have. I think James has it to a pretty good place as far as asylum goes. It's not perfect, but I think it's 70-80% where we'd like it to be. And certainly 70-80% better is better than the current situation. But Tony, I really think that Joe Biden doesn't want to solve this problem. I think he's very happy to have 10, 12, 13,000 people crossing the border every day, hoping that they might pick up an extra congressional seat or two or three. And you look up here in Capitol Hill and two or three seats can make all the difference in the world, let alone a purple state and a Senate seat.
Well, I spoke to Senator Lankford over the weekend about the bill, and he was giving me the progress, and it sounded like it was moving forward and it was a reasonable approach. If the Democrats walk away from this, after these good faith efforts from Republicans to solve this problem, at least provide a way forward, I mean, I think the only action, the only probably solution in the House that they're going to see, conservatives, will be to shut the government down. Because if there's no way to address this border crisis, I think they're going to use extreme measures.
I think it's very, very possible. I think even without this issue, it's going to be hard for Speaker Johnson to find something that's going to work on the House side. He has, one or two votes to play with. I think he has the hardest job in the world right now trying to manage that caucus. We are truly between a rock and a hard place. What are we spending $10 billion a day on interest, $34 trillion in debt? Your listeners know the story. There's just no extra money floating around here, and we're all feeling this pressure. We're feeling the financial pressure of a government that's financially broke, as well as this chaos and this crisis at the border, all coming to fruition at the same point in time. So we may have a government shutdown. I could see a CR happening. And maybe, Tony, you're a better predictor than I am.
Well, I think if the House, if the Republicans are not allowed to address the border issue in this supplemental bill, if it does not go forward in this, they're going to have to find a measure to do that. It may be the CR, and that's just going to it's going to really gum things up even more so than it, that they are right now in the House. I want you mentioned Secretary Mayorkas earlier this week. You led a no confidence resolution in the Senate regarding his failed leadership in the Department of Homeland Security.
That's right. So what we offered on the Senate floor was a vote of no confidence in Secretary Mayorkas. Look, he's derelict in his job. He has broken his oath. He refuses to execute the law of the land that the Fence Act of 2006, I believe, requires him to maintain operational control of the border. And there's no one in this country that thinks he has operational control of the border. And I mentioned earlier, he broke the law as far as how to handle the parole situation. So I think because of all those reasons, there should be a vote of no confidence from the Senate. Now, the impeachment has to start over on the House side. But my hope was the night before their proceeding started, we put some wind beneath themselves. And I think it's important your listeners also to know that public opinion also helps drive the momentum of an impeachment hearing. So public opinion is important. And we were trying to help get that message out of exactly why Mayorkas is incompetent, why he's derelict in his duties, why he should be impeached.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right that continuing to talk about it, educate the public is extremely important. We only have about a minute left, Senator, but you led a coalition of Republican senators reacting to a proposed rule from the Biden administration that would affect foster parents and essentially could make foster children homeless. Explain.
Yeah, Tony, can you believe we have an administration that wants to make it impossible for Christian families, for families of faith to have a foster child or to adopt a child? So the latest bomb that this Biden administration has dropped has said, unless you agree to participate in their gender identity facade game and confirm that situation, that they would not allow you to have a foster child or to adopt a child. Who would have thought, Tony, we met each other 7 years ago. I knew that you were going to be a person to help me fight for our family values. This administration has done crazy things like encouraging men to breastfeed. They want to take away school lunches if you don't let boys participate in girls' sports. And now this one, if you don't confirm to their woke agenda and gender identity, then you cannot participate in the program. They're coming after Christians like you and me.
And they're hurting the children. This is ultimately hurting children who need homes, loving homes. It's outrageous. Senator Roger Marshall, I want to thank you for leading on Capitol Hill on these important issues, and thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Tony. Always good to be with you.
All right, Senator. Senator Roger Marshall of Kansas. By the way, our poll question this week has to do with immigration, and love to know what you think. Text the word poll to 67742. That's the word poll to 67742. All right, stick with us. We're coming back.
For 40 years, Family Research Council has been in Washington, D.C., championing faith, family, and freedom in public policy and the culture from a biblical worldview. But we need your help to keep going. With your support, we can continue to equip believers to stand firm in our culture and defend biblical truth in the halls of government. Will you consider partnering with us today? To give, text the word GIVE to 67742.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, and it's good to have you along. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, here's our poll question. We were talking about the immigration issue. Well, that's our question for the week. You can text poll to 67742 to participate. And here it is. On the topic of immigration, what does the Bible say is the overriding concern of the civil government? prioritize protecting citizens, empathizing with the plight of migrants, a combination of both? Let us know what you think. Text poll to 67742. All right, with the first deadline for a government shutdown rapidly approaching, Speaker of the House Mike Johnson continues spending negotiations with Senate Democrat leader Chuck Schumer and the White House. Now, remember that Mike, and I was talking with him this morning, he's got a two-seat margin, and then he's up against Chuck Schumer, who has control of the Senate and the White House, the president. So, I mean, he's like in a corner, and he's fighting to get the best he can. Well, the framework of a potential deal, which Speaker Johnson recently presented his Republican colleagues, eliminates bloated omnibus spending packages, which is going to happen if we don't get something through, cuts billions from side deals, and allows the fight for more conservative wins to continue. However, there are a lot of conservatives who are not happy. Now, the question is it a bad deal, or is it the best deal possible? Joining me now to discuss this, Stephen Moore. He's a distinguished fellow in economics at the Heritage Foundation and a senior economist at Freedom Works. Steve, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hi, Tony.
So tell me, is this a bad deal, or is it the best deal the speaker can get?
Well, Tony, you're going to have very, very few people on your show who want to cut government spending more than I do. So let's get that straight. I think that we've got the most, we've got a fiscal psychopath in the White House. What Biden has done to our country in the last 3 years, with the $6 trillion of additional debt, the fact that we're now at $34 trillion national debt. And by the way, Tony, I think you know this, but I want to make sure your viewers and listeners understand this. If he gets in again, he wants to take the debt to over $50 trillion. So to me, am I going to sing hallelujah over this deal? No. I am not. I think there's a lot of problems with it, but I think we have to be smart here. I think what we need to do as conservatives is, I'm not in favor of government shutdown right now because I think it takes the eye off the ball. The eye has to be on the Democrats who are bankrupting our country. And these little skirmishes now aren't going to make any difference if we don't get Joe Biden and Chuckie Schumer out of the power centers that they have right now. So I want the American people to know, yes, we have a bloated budget. Yes, we are on the verge of a bankrupting of our country. And the only way, Tony, in my opinion, to prevent that from happening is to get these people out of office.
Right. I mean, bottom line, it's elections. Elections have consequences on policies, on spending, on everything. But when you look at the current situation, And my viewers and listeners know that I'm friends with Mike. He's on the program a lot. Yeah. But I even defended some of McCarthy's efforts to move the ball down the field. Mm-hmm. I do not think that we win by burning the system down. I think we got to change it. But if we just refuse to do anything, it's not going to work.
I agree with that. I mean, by the way, there are some times, you know, like when Newt Gingrich was going up against Bill Clinton, when, you know, they came to loggerheads and a shutdown of the government was the only way to move forward. I just don't think this is the time for that. I think the media and everybody would be against the Republicans. You know, we don't normally win these fights, as you know. You've been in these battles as I have for a long time. You know, look, I think the speaker did about as well as he could. Let's not forget, I mean, I want to restate what you said. The Republicans have a three-seat majority right now, a functional three-seat majority out of 435. They don't have the Senate, and they don't have the presidency. So we're not going to be able, unfortunately, the reality is we're not going to be able to drive budget policy with those narrow margins and the Democrats controlling two-thirds of the power. Schumer, and here's another point. I want to make people clear about this. Joe Biden, not only has he spent $6 trillion, he has basically proposed no spending cuts whatsoever. None.
Now, I want to say I see a scenario where a government shutdown might be an appropriate position to take. If, for instance, right, we were talking earlier in the program that the Senate now is you know, slow walking this supplemental bill that has the border protections. I do think that if it comes down to it, we should have a fight over the border. And if we, whatever we have to attach it to, whether it's a CR, whether it's a supplemental, whether it's whatever it might be, I do think that's a fight worth having.
Well, you know, that's one of those 80-20 issues where 80% of Americans are with you and me and Mike Johnson and the Republicans on that one. Nobody can make heads or tails out of what this president is doing on the immigration issue. And I'm very pro immigration, but my God, you've got to have a border. You've got to have we don't know whether criminals are coming in, drug dealers, terrorists, people with medical conditions. That is no way to run a country. And by the way, I think you've seen what happened in New York. People are so infuriated by this that they close down the schools to house the illegal immigrants. I mean, how crazy is this?
Right. So to your point about keeping your eye on the issue, is if the Republicans preemptively shut down government with, just by not negotiating over something that people just don't understand, it is going to backfire. But if they push the issue, and I've had this conversation with the speaker, and they are pushing on the border issue and that battle, which he wants to have, he just can't get the Senate to get the bill over there to him. That's one I think you're absolutely right. The American people will be with them.
There's no doubt. And, as I said, look, the American people want us to cut the budget. I don't care if you're Republican, Democrat, Independent. Everyone knows, Tony, in their hearts, that what we're doing is unethical, unconstitutional. And extreme. As an economist, I have to say this. If we continue to do this and we had this budget for $50 trillion of debt, the train is going to go over the cliff. So this is a serious heart attack.
Now, Steve, as you mentioned, last question, you and I have been around for a while. And, conservatives have a lot of different opinions, and it's one thing. I like to use the analogy that Paul uses in the New Testament about the body of Christ. It's one body but many members. And we can see things differently, we can approach them differently, but we shouldn't be beating up our own body. I mean, isn't unity kind of important?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, and look, some of my best friends and people who I highly respect and work for don't like this, and fine, reasonable people can disagree. But let's not call people sellouts and that kind of thing. This is not a sellout. This is a tactical decision about how we can take back power. And look, I work with Donald Trump. I'm his economic advisor. I guarantee you, we put him back in the office, we're going to get the economy moving, we're going to get the budget under control, we're going to, obviously, the border situation. So it's going to take new leadership. That's the bottom line.
Bottom line, well said. Steve Moore, always great to see you. Thanks so much for taking time to join us today.
Thank you.
You can find out more about Stephen Moore when you visit tonyperkins.com. And while you're there, it's not too late to get your copy of the journal that goes along with the 2-year Bible reading plan. You can find the link right there at tonyperkins.com.
Most of us have wrestled with deep questions about the meaning of life at one time or another. Thankfully, Family Research Council's Center for Biblical Worldview's latest publication, titled An Introduction to Worldview, provides the answers. With this new resource, we invite you, your family, and your church to evaluate what makes up a worldview and to see how a biblical worldview provides the most satisfying answers to life's biggest questions. To read the full publication, visit frc.org/worldview. Again, that's frc.org/worldview.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. While Joe Biden continues to pound the drum on January 6th and the so-called insurrection, he ignores large-scale crime around the country. Here's FRC President Tony Perkins with his thoughts on the topic.
All right, it is quite clear that President Biden is going to make January 6th the theme of his reelection campaign. Play clip 8.
Let me say what others cannot. We must reject political violence in America. Always, not sometimes, always. It's never appropriate. The violence of January 6th was an extension of an old playbook from the threats and violence and intimidation.
You know what? I have said that. In fact, I've spoken out. I think January 6th was foolish for those who violated the law. But it was a riot. It was an insurrection. You don't have insurrections with signs and placards and flags. But I was also talking about unrest and civil disobedience prior to that. It's like it went down the memory hole for the left. Now, is it accidental that the Washington Post ran with this big headline today? Violent political threats surge as 2024 begins, haunting American democracy. Coincidence? Well, let me just read the first couple of paragraphs. Rusty Bowers, a former speaker of the Arizona House of Representatives who played a pivotal role in resisting efforts to overturn the 2020 presidential election, drove into his neighborhood east of Phoenix the day after Christmas to a spine-chilling scene. His home, nestled off a dirt road in an unincorporated slice of the desert, was surrounded by sheriff's deputies. An unknown caller had reported that there was a pipe bomb inside and that a woman had been murdered. After searching the house and questioning Bowers' wife and grandson, according to Bowers and authorities, sheriff's deputies determined that neither claim was true. Now, this is, it goes on to say, the incident of swatting, this is a prank call to emergency services designed to draw law enforcement response, wasn't just a terrifying moment for the Bowers and his family. It was one of the many violent threats and acts of intimidation that have defined the lives of various government officials since the 2020 election. So this just all started in 2020? This violence and this intolerance? I don't think so. I mean, I guess it was 2012 when, inspired by the Southern Poverty Law Center, a leftist organization that the Biden administration actually relies upon to track domestic terrorists, listed the Family Research Council and inspired a gunman to come in and shoot one of our employees with the desire to actually kill all of us with 100 rounds of ammunition. Now, I want to continue on here. Now, a professor at government at Harvard University, Stephen Levitsky, who studies democracies around the world, said politicians and election workers who are threatened have their lives affected, often needing to adopt new security measures or other safeguards. Yeah, tell me about it. And this happened long before 2020. I mean, I could go through the litany of threats made by the left and the results of that. Now, Levinsky noted that while violent threats span the political spectrum, the vast majority come from activists and others on the far right. And this is the article of the Washington Post. Let me continue. For instance, Representative Elise Stefanik said on NBC's Meet the Press over the weekend that she condemned violence, but she also echoed Trump's characterization of those incarcerated for their role in the violent January 6th insurrection as hostages. Oh, so if you question the left's narrative, you're promoting violence? I mean, one, again, the left, everything prior to January 2021 and in 2020 apparently went down the memory hole for the left, because you remember the 2016 election deniers, which actually included President Biden and Hillary Clinton? Well, let me continue, because this is not isolated. The Washington Times, now generally a favorable publication, yesterday had an article on the same thing. President Biden has blamed former President Donald Trump and his followers for the growing wave of political violence in the U.S., but analysts say the surge in threats and attacks is a bipartisan phenomenon. Now, this goes into, let me just read the first couple of paragraphs. In a series of speeches to kick off the campaign year, Mr. Biden said Mr. Trump and his supporters embrace political violence and laugh about it. Those who study the issue say both sides of America's increasingly hostile politics have plenty of culpability. It's not all about Trump. There are forces on the left that are just as intemperate as Trump, said Benjamin Ginsberg, who researches political violence at Johns Hopkins University. Trump bears some of the blame, but there are plenty of Democrat politicians and operatives who are intemperate and prone to violence. Well, that's a little bit better, a little more balanced in the reporting. Maxine Waters, he pointed to Maxine Waters, told Democrats to get in the face of Republicans. It is a prelude to shooting at them, Ginsburg said. But I want to continue here before I run out of time. Last year, this is the Washington Times reporter. Last year, at least 250 people were criminally charged in connection with political violence, according to the Justice Department data. Roughly 40 people were killed in incidents linked to politics, according to a separate study by Reuters. Now, I think this is actually an example of lazy journalism. So I went to look at Reuters. And Reuters, this Reuters article was from August of 2023. And I want to read from it. The November 5th killing of Anthony King was among 213 cases of political violence identified by Reuters since the January 6th, 2021 attack. Wait a minute. Why is that the date where we just start tracking all of this? So everything is tracked from January 6th. Nothing before that apparently counts, except, I'm going to drop down to the fifth paragraph in this Reuters article. Incidents of political violence began rising in 2016 around the time of Trump's first run for the presidency, said Gary LaFrie, a University of Maryland criminologist. Well, so they don't want to count the actual incidents. They just want to say, well, it was since Trump's been around. Now, let me just put a little context here, okay? Let me talk about what happened in the summer of 2020. 140 cities were torched in the most expensive case of civil disobedience and rioting and looting that has ever taken place in the country. $2 billion. There were lives lost. It's been hard, it's hard to track down, but about 24 people died as a result of the riots that ensued after George Floyd. More than 2,000 police officers were injured. And, of course, you recall Portland, Oregon, that went on for weeks, the demonstration there and the millions of dollars that were spent there protecting federal facilities. But that's all gone in the memory hole. We don't count any of that. It's only since January 6th have we seen these incidents of political unrest and hostility. Now, that doesn't even give me, I don't even have time to get into the attacks on churches that have taken place during the Biden administration. In fact, we are just calculating what took place in this last year, the hostility toward churches. We've seen a doubling of the attacks on churches in this last year, 412 that we've documented thus far in 2023. Now, I want to go back to, and I'm going to wrap this up. But Ginsburg, in his interview with the Washington Times, says this: although analysts agree political violence is rising, no broad solution is apparent. Ginsburg said increased law enforcement is one solution, but he also called on Americans to avoid getting their news from only sites with political slants. Well, good luck. He said lawmakers must be more willing to compromise and find bipartisan solutions. Let me give you a solution. And it actually goes back to the first president of the United States, George Washington, in his farewell address. He says, all of the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. And then he goes on in that farewell address to say this: and let us with caution indulge the supposition that morality can be maintained without religion. Whatever may be conceded to the influence of refined education on minds of a particular structure, reason and experience, both forbid us to expect that national morality can be maintained in exclusion of religious principle. So the very thing that we need is being driven out. That is a recognition of God and religion, allowing people to live out their faith in such a way that it affects the world around them. That, my friends, that is the answer.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us. I look forward to having you back here again next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.